The small towns and villages of the St. Lawrence River Valley in northern New York have long been alive with the sounds of fiddles. Yes, there have also been pump organs and brass bands, and in recent years, garage-style rock groups, but fiddling has persevered. A generation or two ago, many men and some women learned to play enough to entertain themselves and their families at home or church. And a few became musical legends in the area, like the mysterious, brilliant Nick Goodall, who wandered in the mid-19th century from place to place, trading his musical talents for a night's stay or food. And there was Jerry Streeter, who, despite his blindness, could tell if square dancers got out of step and chastise them roundly for it. And later, there was Ralph Aldis, Ward Burdick, Stan Carey, and Howard Woodcock. Howard's son Don remembers what it was like growing up with music in his house.
Oh, I think of the old parlor in the house. I think of my dad playing the fiddle, mom playing piano. Grandpa used to play banjo. Oh, I'd be probably toddling around on the floor. I remember fiddling ever since I was probably old enough to know anything, probably old enough to talk. So that's basically how I started fiddling or getting into this type of music.
Donnie Woodcock still operates the small family dairy farm at Kendry Corners along the Oswegatchie River in central St. Lawrence County. It's the same farm and farmhouse where he learned to love old fiddle music and where he learned to play. Recently turned 50, Don is best known to most in the North Country for his great talent at fiddling. He's become as admired in his generation as the masters of old were in theirs. Welcome to Meet the Masters. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, your host for this series of conversations with traditional artists from the northern region of New York State, the North Country. Each individual or community group in the series has been acknowledged as masters of their art by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York, an organization dedicated to the preservation and presentation of local folk culture. All these artists have been honored with the North Country Heritage Award and are well-known institutions in their own corners of the region, admired and respected for who they are and what they do. Unlike many who grew up in the 1940s and 50s, Don Woodcock's musical tastes were not particularly influenced by early rock and roll or jazz or the hip parade. But the older music that he loved declined in general popularity when rural kids with cars went to the movies to hear Pat Boone and Elvis Presley and learn to dance to Chubby Checker or the Beatles. By the mid-1960s, however, things started turning around.
Actually, 25 or 30 years ago, fiddling sort of made kind of a comeback. It had kind of gone down from around probably the late 1940s, early 50s, and you didn't hear too much of it. I guess rock and roll kind of pushed it over to one side, and really around late 60s, early 70s, it started coming back a little bit. I really didn't know there were as many old-time fiddlers around as there was until they started having contests. Russell, New York, started having them around 1970, and the first few contests they had, there really were hardly any rules. In fact, I remember the very first contest they had at Russell. I think there were four of us. I think Dad and I, and there was a fellow by the name of Wesley Defoe here from Canton, and another, Don LaBarge, competed, and I think they really didn't know what they were doing, and they had no idea about how to go about with what to play as fiddle songs, and they had no judges, so they just two or three people out of the audience volunteered to judge, and we probably couldn't carry a tune in a bushel basket, and then it went from there. And then they started getting a little more sophisticated after each one, and they started being a little more particular about the rules and about what tune should be played, and they started getting music teachers as judges, which is a little more appropriate, someone who knows what they're talking about, music.
And we're moving right along now. Give the judges just a second here to kind of get their sheets straightened around. So we'd like to thank you now, and this is the last one on the contest, and surely not least. I think you're going to enjoy this, too. Be number 14, judges, on your sheet. And 67 years young. Number 14.
I try a little bit of maple sugar, my version of maple sugar, that is.
While the first contests were local and gave many old-timers the opportunity to play for an audience again, the idea quickly caught on. Regional competitions, like this one held at St. Lawrence University in 1977, attracted large crowds, and musicians could compete with the best fiddlers from other places. Don's local successes eventually led him to bigger contests. Besides the challenges of the competition, he really enjoyed hearing and swapping tunes with so many top-notch fiddlers from all over. A bonus for this modest man was winning the New York State Fiddling Championship three different times, becoming grand champion, and retiring the trophy to his living room.
I think they started the state contest about 1970. I didn't go until about 1975. There was a fiddler from up here that I was friends of, Floyd Sherman. And he started going to them 3-4 years before I did. And we got talking about it, and so I decided one year that I'd go. And that was 1975, I believe. I don't think I placed even that year. Then I started going back on a regular basis, I think. After the second year I went, I won the state contest. Well, the rule was that if you won, you had to go back the next year and be a judge. So I believe I judged in 78, then I went back, competed again, and I won again in 79. Then I went back as a judge in 80, and then I went back in 81. I didn't win that year. I think I took third. And then in 82, I went back and won it again. And then I retired from the competition that year, as it was. That was original rule that the fellow that set the competitions up, his name was Joe Hughes DeVenus, and he said if the third time winner of the New York fiddling contest, you were to retire from the competition. So I said that was what we would do. But I didn't retire from competitions, of course. I still went to Canada and over to New England and Barry, Vermont, and still enjoy that.
The rules for fiddle competitions involve playing at least two tunes, a waltz and an up-tempo jig or reel. Sometimes the fiddler gets to play a third tune of their own choosing. Each performer is allowed an accompanist, usually guitar or piano. Here's Donnie playing a typical competition tune, the Silver Dollar Waltz, from a home recording made in 1986.
I don't think people really believe me when they hear that I never had any violin training, but I never had a lesson in my life in violin. Honest to God. The only thing that actually that I ever was told was by my dad that when I was holding the bow, sometimes I would tend to slide up and be holding the bow maybe 6 inches from the frog where it's supposed to be held, and he would say, get back down and hold it where you're supposed to at the very end with the frog. And once in a while, my wrist would, holding the violin, would be back up against the neck of the instrument, and he'd say, get your wrist out away from the neck. And that's really the only two things I ever was told. I taught myself.
Thank you. Like so many of the traditional musicians we've met, Don Woodcock comes from a musical family. He credits his father's sister, Dorothy Woodcock Myers, now in her 90s and living in California, for getting them all started. She was an early student at the Crane School of Music in Potsdam, where she trained to become a music teacher and actually taught her younger brother, Howard, to play the violin. He later became widely known as a dance musician and was described by one ethnomusicologist as having the largest repertoire of traditional fiddle tunes in the region.
I guess it started, of course, with me listening to my dad, Howard, and I know at home when I was small, of course, Dad would play in the evenings when the work was done. He and Mom would gather in the parlor around the piano. Mom played piano, Dad played violin, and once in a while, Grandfather Fred would play banjo. And of course, my grandmother Woodcock used to sing at church, and I guess she used to go and sing at funerals and weddings. And I guess her brother, Leslie Wells, used to do the same thing. I just heard that last fall, that he used to go to funerals and weddings and sing at church. And then Grandma's brother, Jay Wells, used to play five-string banjo, and he and my father, of course, played together quite a lot. Dad would go down to the old Wells homestead, which was down about a mile and a half down the road from where we live. I remember as a boy him going down, and they'd play sometimes in the afternoon just to entertain themselves. I don't think we didn't have TV when I was real small, till maybe I was five or six before we had one, and so I think that tended to fill in for recreation and entertainment. I think all households were more like doing things like that back in those times.
Howard found frequent opportunities to play the fiddle in his neighborhood and surrounding towns as well. While the days of kitchen dances in the old farmhouses were generally past, people went to dance in town halls and local taverns. In farming communities like the Woodcocks, dances were held in grange halls. The Grange, known formally as the Patrons of Husbandry, was an association of farmers organized in the mid-19th century to help agriculture advance economically and politically. It was also an important social group. Most chapters built their own halls where meetings, meals, and musical entertainment provided opportunities for local farm families to fraternize.
I don't remember many house parties, or I don't think Dad ever did too many of those. Mostly they played at Grange dances, and I believe they formed the Grange in 1900. They leased land from my great-grandfather Charles and built a building, and that's been going. They still have Grange there, 98th year this year. And, of course, the Methodist Church sits on the corner of my property. I can't remember exactly what year that started. And then, of course, they had a school, a country school, which all the family attended except me. It had gone out by the time I got old enough to go, so always kind of regretted it.
Among the Woodcocks' neighbors was Charlie Anderson, a Scotsman who had relocated to northern New York, where he, too, was a farmer and a fiddler.
We attended Kendrew Grange. I remember him from ever since I can remember anybody. And, of course, after Grange meetings, they'd always get the fiddles, and after they'd have their little lunch and go upstairs, and then they'd dance for about an hour. And Charlie, he had quite an influence on my playing. I learned a lot of tunes. He was a native of Scotland, and I always remembered some of the ones he played, like the Blackthorn Stick Jig and My Love Is But a Lassie Yet, and one of his favorites was Peekaboo Waltz. They used to do this at Grange, Charlie and Dad.
At a fiddle festival, where Donnie always attracts a crowd, he spent a few minutes talking about other influential fiddlers.
The next gentleman I want to remember was another neighbor of mine, lived just up the road. His name was Troom Crary. I don't know if anybody remember Troom. I know my sister's sitting out here. She does. His first name was Truman, as in Harry Truman, of course, the president. And he was a great old-time fiddler. He used to fiddle. Anybody remember Joe Calipari? Joe Calipari's band? Okay, he used to be the fiddler for that group around here in the Potsdam area back many years ago. Here's a couple tunes. One of them is a kind of familiar one that Truman always liked to play called Red-Haired Boy.
In the 1910s and 20s, Truman Crary, Howard Woodcock, and a number of other local musicians played in an orchestra led by a self-taught fiddler named Jerry Streeter from Rensselaer Falls, a few miles from the Woodcock farm. Streeter and his orchestra were legendary, always in demand for dances in hotels and dance halls for miles around.
He apparently was an excellent fiddler. He won contests quite a lot when he was playing in those. And they were in quite quite demand playing the dances. He had two daughters that played, and a son-in-law, and then there was a clarinet player used to play along too, and they used to play all over the place, go by train. I've heard my mother and my Uncle Malin tell about there's a little dance hall in Eddy over by between Canton and DeKalb Junction, and they used to, Jerry Streeter and Bood and Marion Jenkins used to go from Rensselaer Falls over to Eddy on the train from Rensselaer Falls and play their dance, and then they'd catch the train and drive home and take their horse from the railroad station back to their farm. And what was unique about Jerry Streeter is that he was blind, and he still was able to call square dances. And it was told that apparently if a set of square dancers on the far end of the hall weren't doing the dancing as they were supposed to, he would stop the music and straighten them out. He could tell by the sound of the steps, the way their feet were shuffling on the floor, whether they were doing it right. And I heard that he would violently hit on the back of his violin with the bow and stop the music. And I do have that violin in my possession, and there you do see scars of that on the back of it. So it's probably true.
Donnie Woodcock playing a Jerry Streeter tune at the 1999 Black Fly Fiddling Festival in Canton, New York. This is Meet the Masters, and I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald.
When I was around 10, I started on piano before I started violin. I remember one day I started playing a little bit, and Dad got his violin out, and I just started accompaniment. We just just happened. It was all. And then eventually I started taking piano lessons. And after 4 or 5 years, I graduated and started taking violin. Although I never had any violin training. I shouldn't say that I started taking violin, but I actually taught myself to play. It's a funny thing. I always wanted to play the fiddle probably before I ever played anything. And when one day I was just happened to think to myself, if I play piano, if I turn the piano upside down and move my fingers on the keys, like from up the scale, and did that on the violin, it should work. And I did something like this, like made the notes with the fingers, and that's how I started. So I wish though I had taken lessons, my technique would have been a lot better. I would have been able to. I think my intonation and my playing would have been much better than it is now if I had.
Like any musician looking for a place to play, Don played fiddle and piano for a number of bands like the Good Timers, the Country Pride, and the Ranchmen. They didn't always play the traditional fiddling tunes he was most interested in, but it gave him a chance to perform.
One of the first bands I played with was at Fiacco's in Potsdam. I played there about 2 or 3 years on Saturday nights. There was a group. We used to do mostly country music, and then we'd do three square dances, usually about every hour, and then we'd do the country songs and the rest of the night, and then go back and do another three squares, and usually about 9 squares a night. And then the last band that I played with would be the Ranchmen, and we do an occasional square dance, not too awful many, but mostly all country music all night. I enjoy it now and then, but I guess for me, I prefer playing the older country and tunes of the 20s, 30s, 40s like my dad used to play. I like that type of stuff better.
That type of stuff involves simple arrangements with acoustic instruments like guitar, banjo, or piano for backup. His own favorite combination is the fiddle, piano, and drum kit. The drums are a really unexpected addition for many in the audience.
Not many fiddlers like drums, but I do. I like drums behind the fiddle music, probably because that's what I heard from when my dad was playing. He always had a piano and drums. Drums seem to give the music a lift. For me, anyway. I'm odd, anyway. I've been playing some with Miriam Gagne from Huntington, Quebec, and Rhonda Rothel from Ogdensburg is the drummer. And Miriam, of course, is a piano player, and she's very widely known across Canada as being about the finest of piano accompaniment that there is. I'm very flattered whenever I have her play for me. She's played for many of the top fiddlers in Canada. She's even traveled to Europe and played on tours. And she's just exceptional. It doesn't matter what kind of a tune you throw at her. The chords all, she fits them in so perfectly that it's just beautiful the way she plays.
Bigger, maybe.
If someone was to come to me and want to learn to play, I'd say take your technical training at Crane or your music teacher, and then go from that to the fiddling. It makes them a lot better player. If they know how to play their positions, they'll play their notes much more clearly and get a nicer tone than by just starting off the way I did. I've helped other people. I never taught anybody. There was a girl here at St. Lawrence University that I helped all a few years back. And then there's a young fiddler in Potsdam, Galen Kopp. I've gotten together a little bit with him. He doesn't need much help. He's so talented, he does it on his own.
Just taking a few lessons probably won't make you a state champion fiddler like Donnie, and he understands that there's more to it than that.
I think music is genetic. I think it's passed from generation to generation. It's just like any type of... Some people are artists. They can paint, and it's just in their blood to be able to paint. Some people have music in their blood. It's a natural thing. And you see it with families. I've seen families that were mechanically inclined. They could tear an engine apart, put it back together, but they might not be able to do music or art. Music was always in my family. Everyone has their own talents.
You've been listening to Don Woodcock, traditional fiddler from Kendrew Corners, New York. And this is Meet the Masters, Conversations with Traditional North Country Artists. The series is produced by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York. This program was written and produced by Varick Chittenden and Lamar Bliss. Interviews were conducted by Varick Chittenden with audio engineering by Lamar Bliss in the studios of North Country Public Radio. I'm your host, Kathleen Fitzgerald. This series is supported by a grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund Community Folklife Program, administered by the Fund for Folk Culture and underwritten by the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Research and field recordings were supported by the Sweetgrass Foundation. Special thanks to Donnie Woodcock for use of his personal recordings.